You're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Season 2, Episode 13 of Commentary, Trek Stars, a show which deals with the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek. Today is part 5 in our series on Richard Matheson as a guy who wrote books that were turned into movies. And today we're looking at his fifth book, A Stir of Echoes, and the adaptation from 1999, Stir of Echoes. I'm Mike.
I'm Max's ghost.
And today we're joined by our friend Rudra. How's it going, Rudra?
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Now, Rudra, you're actually one of our few friends who works in the industry. You want to tell people what it is you do?
Yeah. Up until very recently, I worked as an assistant director, and I worked on movies and television here in our fine city of Chicago.
Which is where Stir of Echoes was shot.
Yeah, which is where Stir of Echoes was shot. I worked with a lot of guys. There's not a ton of crews here, so most everybody I know worked on that movie. And then I just worked on whatever television shows and movies that come through here. So like Dark Knight, Batman Begins, Wanted.
So you screwed up traffic for a long time.
Yeah, I'll never forget. There was one time where I was, working at the theater as a projectionist, and I'm walking by the new Tyler Perry movie as it's ending, and I look out as I'm walking by, and I see the credits rolling up, and I see your name on the screen. I'm like, what?
What did you do?
He only shot like a week and a half of that movie.
Yeah.
They're really nice people. They're nice folks.
I'm sure they are.
Yeah.
Rudra, what about your relationship with Star Trek? Are you a Star Trek fan?
I am a Star Trek fan. I wish I was like as huge a fan as it is to be able to hold my own with you guys, because you guys are like, anytime I have a question about Star Trek, no, I just go to Mike. And I remember, what was it, 5 years ago? And you gave me those, when I was rewatching DS9, and you gave me annotated lists of like what order to watch everything in, and I was like,
Mike wrote a list.
No, okay. Well, he gave me DVDs with post-it notes that said, "Okay, stop, and then go watch this TOS episode, watch this like the Tribbles up callback and stuff like that." But that was like amazing. I was like, "Oh my god!" And I felt like I was taking a master's class in DS9.
Okay, so you've seen all of Deep Space Nine then?
Yeah. Well, I guess I think of it this way, is like Next Generation isn't the Trek for me. And then like my dad's Trek was TOS. Like, and I remember being a kid and watching TOS with him and like very much took it to heart. Like it was one of the few fictional things that my dad like really, really loved and thought was like really important. And I don't know. I mean, that's just where it started. Like I do like Enterprise. Didn't really watch Voyager. Didn't get into it. I think DS9 is amazing. But I basically just like all of it. Like, I even like the new J.J. Abrams movies. So. Yeah.
And what about Richard Matheson? Are you a Matheson fan?
I'm a Matheson fan in that I'm, like, familiar with his big works. And I recognize that he's, like, a giant. You know, when I was, like, in high school, I definitely remember sitting down, like, in the, like, science fiction aisle. And, like, just, I remember being like, who's this guy? There's so many books. Like, he had a lot of stuff. And
like,
so,
he had shelves.
Right.
Plural.
Yeah, and you just were like, it was like him and Asimov, and there were a couple other people who I was like not as interested in. So Matheson, because he was like all over the place, like he did write a little bit of everything, and that was what got me interested. He was probably, I mean, I Am Legend, I think, I'm pretty sure, is the first vampire anything I read.
Cool. Well, have you seen Matheson's episode of the original series, The Enemy Within? This is the one where Kirk is split into...
It's been a while. I did go try to like review a little bit of it before this, and I just remember just being like, wow, the acting is really good in this one. Like, I think he writes for Shatner nicely. That seemed like what happened.
That's there. My theory. In fact, when I've been reading all of these books, I've sort of just been envisioning Shatner as the main character, and it almost always works. It really does. Okay, so moving on to today's book, it is A Stir of Echoes. It was Richard Matheson's fifth book. It was written in 1958, which is 2 years after The Shrinking Man, which we covered last week. So this book is about a guy who is hypnotized at a party for social reasons, and when he comes to, he has strange mental abilities, which allow him to do things like apparently see ghosts and read people's minds, or at least sort of like hear what they're thinking. And basically this wreaks havoc in his life, and hijinks ensue. So, Rudra, what did you think of the book?
We just had our first kid about a year ago. And when I read this book, it was 14 years ago, was the first time I read it. So it was like after high school.
Did you read it when the movie came out? Is that what you read?
Yeah, it was around then. Okay. Yeah. That would line up. I was in college, and I was like, oh, I'll read this. So I read the book, and I'm not really into like horror. And I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. I like it, blah, blah, blah. At the time, I was like in this big John Cheever phase, and I loved it. It really reminded me of Cheever. There's like a quality of it. Like, it reminds me of The Swimmer. It reminds me of like suburban LA. And I remember just like really liking that quality of it. And then, you know, then there's like a thriller like in there. Mm-hmm. So like, there seems like there's just a deep, very deep commentary. And then thriller happens. Rereading it, I was like, the feeling of dread that I had, I just reread it for this. And like, with having a kid, like, there's stuff about having a kid in there that, like, I didn't even know I could be scared about reading it. I'm crazy re-impressed with the book, because I'm just, there's all this stuff about his son, Richard, at the beginning. He's, like, afraid, and he just, like, how much he loves his kid and stuff like that. And I just was like, oh, my God, I totally 100% understand that dread in it. And I didn't realize, but that is such an effective device in the book for just, like, owning, getting me to buy into everything that happens. Mm-hmm. The idea of like that fear, and then I understand the wife's fear through his fear about his son. It's so I don't know if I even answered your question.
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing too, and that's something that I thought about, you know, just seeing that interview and hearing that, you know, Matheson had like a bunch of kids and stuff like that. It sounds like he was, you know, kind of a family man and stuff, and I really thought that was an interesting aspect of this book, the idea of showing this guy almost first and foremost as a father, you know, like in Shrinking Man, the way that that's dealt with his kid is almost non-existent. It's like he's a completely absent father who, like, by the time that the story, you know, unfolds, like, hates his kid because his kid thinks of him as like a cool doll, you know, or something.
Well, that's sort of the point.
I know that's the point, but they didn't do a good job of, or he didn't do a good job of establishing the relationship early on that he, you know, this was a guy who loved his kid, and that's part of it, I think, is a structural problem. But here, like, this is the first time where I was like, this is a protagonist that I actually like in a Matheson book. I mean, in I Am Legend, you like him, and then at the end, you're kind of like, oh, well, okay, there's some lurking variables here. But here, I was like, this is a good guy, you know?
Right.
And he's got a, you know, the love for his kid really, you know, kind of shines through, and also for his wife. And I'm like, I actually like this guy, you know?
Very much so.
And, I mean, the stuff with the kid, you know, I can totally understand that, you know? And in some ways, I think it's the most relatable character that he's, up to this point, four books in for us, that we've seen. But what about you, Max? What did you think?
Well, I like the Cheever comparison. I would have never thought about that, because I sort of have the little Venn diagram and Cheever's way off or in the right corner. And but, like, you know, if I were to make a different Venn diagram about, like, how people establish realities in novels, that would probably make sense. But, like, the granularity in Matheson's books was always really impressive. Like, with, like, a paragraph, you know where everyone's sitting, like, what's on the table, and it doesn't feel forced. There's, a logic and a flow, and everything's sort of, like, very organic, but, like, everything feels very real. And that granularity, that like, everything is an object, and it matters, and these things have, like, a connection to things, and, like, there's a fluidity to his writing that I've always been found very impressive. And in Stir of Echoes, I think that there are points where it almost goes too far, where, like, I want him to sort of reel back a little bit, because he's describing the sensations of being a medium, mm-hmm, perhaps in excess, because at a certain point, I think that it's kind of impossible to describe something that's defined as impossible to describe.
See, I disagree with that. Like, I would say that, you know, when you were describing, you know, his style just now, I was thinking about how I generally agree with that, again, aside from The Shrinking Man, which I think is handled incredibly terribly. But, you know, he was shooting for something really big with that, no pun intended. With this one, I mean, I really did get the idea. Like, I felt like, you know, when he was describing, like, his headaches or whatever, you know, the character's powers.
No, I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying, like literally, there were, like, a few moments where I thought that was an extra adjective.
I'm not sure. Maybe it's because it got me. He hooked me so well with my interest in the characters that by the time the inciting incident of the hypnosis occurs, I was like, not as, like, my buy-in was like, I was like, okay, I feel grafted in some ways that were odd. Like, the brother just shows up at the beginning and stuff. Like, there's some things like that I think are odd.
It kind of feels like you're jumping into, like, a story in a very odd position. Like,
yeah, a little bit.
Sort of like there's no introduction.
It's sort of funny. Like, I mean, it's not my place to be like, oh, well, maybe with the different editor, they would have been like, just start in the middle,
mm-hmm.
you know. But then again, Ben, you wouldn't understand how he feels about his wife and really set the table the way he does. He does such a good job with that I was like, oh man, I wonder if he got to a point where he like finishing the like getting writing like in the middle of the first act, and he's like, I could just write the most amazing novel, like I could write like a Raymond Carver novel, or I can write this book about ghosts. Like, I wonder if that happened, because it's like he's got really interesting family going on.
It could be, but at the same time, I don't think so, because it's not like he hasn't not written supernatural stuff. The idea of, you know, starting in the middle or whatever, you know, that's actually something that he talked about in regards to both I Am Legend and The Shrinking Man, and the fact that he did do that. Like, originally, the way that those were structured, he thought of not doing that, and then he realized that he needed to jump right into the action and then go back and you know, catch people up as he went along.
But those are both high concept,
right? This I don't think you would need to, and I think it actually works better the way it is. There was a little clunky stuff at the beginning when he was setting things up, like, you know, he's like, oh, I looked across the street and saw our pregnant neighbor. And then I went into the house and, you know, my wife was, you know, having some trouble because of her pregnancy. And I'm like, wait a minute, I actually went back and reread it. I'm like, so are there two pregnant ladies? Because it's not like, he's not like, we were both pregnant. Isn't that crazy? She was pregnant. He was pregnant. You know, and then it's not until like three chapters later, like basically at the hypnotism, where he's like, oh, we had to get going, you know, there were two pregnant ladies here. You know, right. I was like, did I miss something, or did he miswrite something? And there's a couple of things like that.
There's like the way the information is delivered, some of it seems like it's close to each other, mm-hmm. but not delivered together.
Yeah.
And so you miss one or the other. I totally agree with that. I completely agree with that. I missed it a little bit myself.
I kind of appreciate the messiness of it, because it kind of feels like, you know, the middle of a journal, because it is first person.
Yeah.
And like, he doesn't feel the need to explain, like, okay, reader, this is my brother-in-law, and this is my wife, and we've been pregnant. Married for a certain number of years. Like, he just sort of just says, like, oh, and this happened, and then this happened. And as readers, we kind of have to figure out why he doesn't feel the need to explain these relationships.
That's a good point, and that might be why, and that probably earns him a certain level of, like, when he went, like, the thing, one of the things you're talking about, like, you liking is that how he viscerally is, Tom Wallace is that main character, like, how he's viscerally reacting mm-hmm. to those, mm-hmm. To his, whatever's happening to him.
Now, the other thing which...
Which is not entirely defined.
Also a plus.
Yeah.
The other thing which I found a little confusing / disappointing, I guess, was you know, there were times throughout the book where, like, bad things would happen, and you'd be like, wow, you know, this guy has, like, really bad luck. You know, he's hired a babysitter who's trying to kidnap his kid, which doesn't, I mean, that scene does not I don't understand that at all. And then at the end, I was like, you know, most of the stuff tied together, and it's like, okay, it's not a million bad things that are happening, it's really just one, you know, crazy woman. Again, Matheson with the crazy women. He loves these women who are drawn to murder by abusive men in their lives. But whatever. The thing with the babysitter, I still don't understand. And I don't know whether it was, you know, just the way that the movie was rewritten or
movie?
The book was rewritten for the movie, or whether it was something that I missed or just whatever, but that didn't play to me at all. Like, the idea that she was trying to kidnap him, but they found her in the backyard.
Where are you getting kidnapped?
They say kidnapped. Yeah, they straight say up kidnapped. Say kidnapped. They say,
but there's no clear evidence that she was trying.
Yeah, but to me it was just like, she just went out to the backyard with him, which is weird. I mean, I thought she was crazy.
Yeah, no, I picked up kidnapping.
Yeah,
too,
no, they
actually.
Said, they flat out said, because when I was reading it, I'm like, what is going on? What is she doing? That's right. So terrible.
They believe that she was going to kidnap him, but yeah. I believe that she was not.
Okay.
What do you think she was going to do?
I don't know.
Was she related to the rest of the story?
I suspect that there probably was some sort of tangential connection to the rest of the story.
Okay, because they make a much clearer connection in the movie.
Yes, and in
right,
the movie...
Right, because it's like someone's sister or something mm-hmm. in the movie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, like in the movie, like they describe, they have like a scene where the babysitter explains what's going on in her head.
Yeah.
And in the book, they don't.
But they also make the connection because they change the person who is...
Yes,
the ghost.
They changed the death.
Spoilers,
the
by the way. We're getting, you know, you should, if you listen to this show, you should know by
spoilers.
Now.
Spoilers. If you haven't read the book that's 50 years old,
or
seen
movie.
The movie that was made
14,
in the,
years, old.
14 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
Spoilers, everybody.
So, all right.
Well, Bruce Willis isn't in it, but if he was, he'd be dead.
The other thing that I thought was interesting was the twist. You know, about 80% into the book, they set up the red herring. And I'm like, oh man, this makes total sense. Okay, look at that. Look at that. How they set that up, and then there's a twist. And in some ways, I was impressed by the twist because I didn't see it coming. But in other ways, I thought it would have made more sense if it was the red herring. I don't know. Just motivationally, what did you think about the twist and the villain or whatever the murderer, I should say.
I thought it was. Perfectly fine. It didn't. I mean, I always find it questionable when people say like, "Oh, that guy did it." Anytime somebody says that guy killed somebody, I'm like, "Well, where's the evidence of that?" It's kind of a pretty big indictment there. I need to see some hard evidence of that. And when it's a ghost telling me that guy killed me, I'm gonna say, "Really?" But is it a ghost? Is it
no,
a ghost?
I don't know.
I don't think that that's really sufficiently answered. And I don't want it to be answered.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be answered.
Yeah, I mean, there are two explanations given for mm-hmm. the for what he's seeing, and I think either of them work. But the fact is that the person that we're looking at is dead,
mm-hmm.
right? The person whose feelings that Wallace is feeling is dead. So whether it's a ghost or it's a psychic emanation, as the psychologist character describes it, like, you know, it's still someone who's dead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what did you think about it?
Well, what I thought about it was like when I said earlier, I was like, well, this, you know, it's incredibly compelling kind of family drama and thriller in mm-hmm. that. And then I think maybe the red herring stuff contributes to it, although it is well set up. I mean, the motivations exist for both,
mm-hmm.
the possibility of both. I don't know. There was something maybe just like it's like a time thing, like just of the period. But mm-hmm. the woman kind of like losing in history is, you know, in histrionics. Is kind of, I don't know why that just didn't do it for me.
That's a Matheson thing. I mean, this isn't the first time we've seen that happen.
Just
someone
shrieking,
is bleeding,
tearing her hair.
Yeah, I mean, it's a thing.
Yeah,
I don't think that he's incredibly good at writing female characters. I don't think he quite understands that. Although, then again,
the
stuff with the wife was really good.
The wife is very good. Yeah,
I think that is an unfair criticism. He's talking about like essentially a biological mechanism, a type of personality that draws chaos to it. Those people.
Are you talking about the main character or the?
I'm talking about crazy people.
Okay.
I'm talking about people who have problems, who draw chaos to them, and are therefore really good to have in a story. If you don't have some sort of mechanism that produces something unusual, then you're not going to have the possible ghosts, in quotation marks. Then you're going to have no ghosts. That's okay. Not a novel.
One thing that I will say about the whole twist and that and all of that stuff is I really do like the way that, you know, this is a story about, you know, Tom Wallace. And we see his arc. And it's almost like, in a lot of ways, it's kind of like the way Unbreakable is structured, where he completes his arc and there's still this thing left over. And it's like, we got to deal with this thing. Now we know what's going on. We know who you are and what you're dealing with. Now we've got to solve this problem. And it's like one last sort of like adventure. It's almost like, well, again, like Temple of Doom. They deal with that. They deal with all the character stuff. And now this is like just, and now we're going to get to see him in action or whatever. We're going to get to see him put his powers to the test, you know, and I did like that. Whatever.
Well, especially, I mean, I especially like it that that's when the first person perspective of the book mm-hmm. became a real asset.
Yeah.
Because he's just like, he's, there's a confidence that comes with him being like, I have some control now. But then he also is like, I have some control of this. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they're going to react. And I thought that was a really well played because that's where the tension is.
Yeah. He kind of cheats it a bit when he's possessed.
Right.
You know, and he's like, I don't remember anything that happened for the next 20 pages, but they told me afterwards. So right. here's what happened. Yeah, that was a little weak, but what can you do, you know? All right, so let's move on to the movie, which was called Stir of Echoes.
Which is a much better title.
Okay, it came out in 1999, which would have been 41 years after the book. It was written and directed by David Capp, who is known for writing all of your favorite summer blockbusters, including...
And many of not your favorite summer blockbusters.
Including Jurassic Park, or
that's
the,
one
Lost,
of the, second.
The Lost World Jurassic Park, where he also plays the unlucky bastard, Mission Impossible, Spider-Man, War of the Worlds, the list goes on and on. This was a movie which he directed. I believe it was his second directorial effort, although don't quote me on that. And it stars Kevin Bacon. Max, what were your thoughts on the movie?
I remember seeing the movie around the time it came out. I didn't see it in theaters because every freaking movie came out that year.
1999, so, yeah, the best year for movies.
So there were some of them this fell was, through the cracks.
This was literally a month after Sixth Sense.
Yes. It was the time for movies with twist endings,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't see it until home video, but I watched it and I was like, I know what this is because I had like a dim memory of reading the thing a long time ago, but I was like 13 or something and I'd completely forgotten the details by then, so I refreshed my memory on the novel after a while, but I enjoyed the movie quite a bit. In retrospect, I find Kevin Bacon's accent infuriating. I absolutely hate him. Why do people who are not from Chicago think people from Chicago sound like people from Boston?
I was just going to say,
what the heck is up with that?
This entire movie felt like when it started up, I'm like, why did he change the setting to Boston? And then I'm like, this isn't Boston. This is Bridgeport.
They just don't understand that we talk normal here.
I swear to God, I think Stir of Echoes could have easily taken place in like a couple blocks from Mystic River.
Instead of it being, you know, a jealous wife or whatever, it's basically two kids who corner a girl,
the hot
drag her into
house.
This house. Yeah, right. It's Jennifer Morrison, you know, Captain Kirk's mom. Mm-hmm. They corner her,
the hot chick from House,
drag her into a house. And, you know, basically try to rape her.
The important thing is the two guys pulled this girl in, wanted to have sex with her. She wasn't feeling it. One of them decided that wasn't good enough. And he started to, like, attack her and tried to rape her. And the other one decided to shut her up by putting some plastic over her head. And then she inconveniently died, ruining their day.
Right.
So they got their dads to help them, just, you know, hide the body.
So you liked the movie, Max.
Oh yeah, when I saw it originally, I mean, like when I recently rewatched it, I was like, oh god, there have been so many better similar movies.
It is. It's very similar to like even Sixth Sense, and it doesn't stack up to any of those. In my opinion,
I mean, like, you know, The Haunting in Connecticut. That's a great ghost movie.
What about you, Rudra? Did you like it or?
You know, it seemed like a, honestly, it just, it strikes me as like kind of a pedestrian work. It's not like, it's not notable. I mostly remember its palette of like unfiltered sunlight and occasional red highlights. Like, that's like all I remember.
Yeah.
And then I also remember like Kevin Bacon's stricken face that he makes. And that's, and Ileana Douglas, the lovely, as always, Ileana Douglas, who's like, who stands in for the brother-in-law.
Right. She's a sister-in-law instead of a brother-in-law.
And she's a good, she seemed like she would, actually rereading the book, she seemed like a great cast for someone who could instigate that in a way that like the brother-in-law in the book. I'm like, what? I don't understand how you pulled this off.
I think either way, you know, it works. I think that's a good,
But it was good casting.
Like, I'm buying her like the hippie chick like attitude. I'm buying her as, you know, the hypnotism interest. And I mean, you know, hypnotism was a bizarre thing. It was a trope used in various things for explaining random nonsense at the time. And in 1999, it wasn't quite so a catch-all for mysterious. But I mean, like, that the hypnotism scene, like the theater imagery.
Oh yeah,
which was the Patio or the Patio Theater in Chicago, by the way.
That's a great sequence. You know, like the sleep appearing, all of that's really well handled. The cover of Paint It Black.
Yeah.
Actually a pretty good cover.
Yeah, but you barely hear in the movie. You hear it in, I remember the trailer vividly.
Yeah, they really played it
and
in
they
there.
Played that all. Yeah, it was a great trailer. So, well, I did not like the movie. I didn't see it when it came out. I almost did. For some reason, I just didn't. But I watched it again today, or watched it for the first time today. And, I honestly didn't like most of the changes that they made. I didn't like the change in setting or character. You know, in setting, like, the other one takes place in Los Angeles, but it's a very suburban setting. It's almost like a commentary on suburbia, I think, in the book. And in this, they move it to, like, a very sort of blue-collar, very city neighborhood on the south side of Chicago. And it's too intense. There's too much of that sort of, like, I don't know.
It's too go have a Boston.
Beer. Yeah, go have a beer after work. There's too much, like, animosity. Like, there's one part where there's, like, a party and, like, a fight breaks out or something, and one of the characters actually says, like, why can't we just have anything that's nice? You know, why does it always need to devolve into drunken debauchery, essentially, you know? And that I thought was a problem. Everything seemed loud and abrasive and everything. Even the main character, you know, like we were talking about before.
His accent.
He's very, not just his accent, but he's very...
it really bothers me.
Well, that's part of it. But like in the book, he's a family man. He's loving of his wife. And the whole thing is like these two people have the good relationship. On one side of the house, you got the other couple, which is messed up, and the other one's messed up, but in the opposite way. It's like, here, these people are actually in a relationship with works, which works. Here, the first thing that you see in here is, you know, his wife coming in and saying, I'm pregnant, and him saying, like, oh, that totally sucks, you know? And it's like, okay, right there, you're setting a tone. The very first time you see them, they're fighting. The way that that character portrayed is, like, crazy, because we're not seeing it from his perspective. In the book, they talk about, you know, how he's on the phone with his wife, and his wife says, like, you know, take it easy, man, and he's thinking, like, oh, she thinks I'm going crazy, but we know that he's not, you know, because we're in his head. And in the in the movie, we're not in his head. If anything, I think it's almost told more from the wife's perspective. In some
who plays the wife in the movie again?
Kathy Irby.
She's
or
a Breaking Betty.
Oh,
Kathy.
Yeah,
she's on like wife.
She's a Breaking Betty.
And because of that, you know, he just seems crazy. Like, we think that he's crazy, and that changes the tone a bit. They also, I mean, there's some.
I don't quite get that. I didn't think of him as crazy.
There's some plot elements, like the thing with, like, changing who it is, who the ghost is, who the killers are, everything like that. From a logical point of view, that makes more sense to me.
But it's streamlined.
It's more streamlined, but the problem with it is that they messed up the main character, and by doing that, everything else is kind of secondary and doesn't matter, and it doesn't work to me.
I agree with you. The character of Kevin, that character is not, we're not inside enough. And the thing is, though, that rests, like, you know, you'd have to be pretty inventive to get us inside his head. I mean, that's the classic conundrum of adapting a first person novel to a film, to a film presentation.
Mm-hmm.
I have some problems with the general concept of first person storytelling in general. I think that as novel writing mechanics go, it's pretty lame and rather limiting. But when it works really well, it's like so part of the DNA of the story that you can't change it.
Yeah.
Like removing like that aspect of the story from it, it's like, well, you can't do that. It's like pulling the spine out of an animal and saying, how fast can it run? I mean, it doesn't work. So the idea that of adapting a movie into, you know, like adapting this into a movie out of a book, it's this particular book, I can't imagine how it could possibly come through without radically changing it into something different.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that they radically changed it into a guy lives in a haunted house, that seems about right.
Roger, any final thoughts on the book and the movie or anything?
I think the Stir of Echoes like stands to me. One of the things that I really liked about the book, and I think it speaks to Matheson, is like he really was trying to explore the human condition, this like very mundane suburban existence, but then he was like really poking at it and finding its soft places. I thought that was really amazing. And I think that the way that he kind of introduced like fantasy slash science kind of dichotomy and how those could oppose each other, that is really, that's like master stuff. You know, that's mm-hmm. really hard stuff to tackle. And I don't think that there's a lot of writers out there who would be able to handle it where you just weren't like, that was just a mess. So I mean, that's my takeaway is like Stir of Echoes is a really, really well done novel because it's trying to tackle a lot of things and it succeeds considerably more than it, you know, doesn't.
Max?
I pretty much agree with all that. I have virtually no problems with the book.
Well, I was very fond of the book. I think that aside from I Am Legend, it's his best book that we've read so far, easily. I really, really liked the portrayal of the characters and his sort of journey. I think that this type of story, ghosts and stuff like that, is something which I normally don't respond to well at all, but the way that it's presented here really worked quite well. And I think that the movie, while fixing some plot issues in the book, it strips out everything that I really liked from the book, and then we're left with a story which is structurally sound that I don't care about. And because of that, I do not like the movie. So that's it. That's Stir of Echoes. Thanks for joining us, Rudra.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Where can people find you? You're on Twitter and whatnot?
I'm on Twitter, yeah, at Rudra Banerjee. I think that's what it is. But rudramakesmovie.tumblr.com is
Rudra
where
makes
I
movie.
Post stuff.
Rudra Makes Movie or Movies?
Makes Movie.
Rudra Makes Movie.
Tumblr.com.
Was okay. Rudra Makes Movies yeah, taken?
I think I'm just making one large movie, one little Instagram video at a time.
There you go. Now you did the and I know you chastised me for not retweeting your Voltron thing, but that's actually it went kind of viral, right?
Yeah, yeah. I work with a guy named Dave Urlakis, who's the brain behind something called Awkward Spaceship on YouTube. And we made a bunch of videos together. The one that was like the biggest was something called "What If Computer Problems Were Real," and that one did a lot of people saw that one. But then we decided to make a Voltron, like behind the scenes Voltron thing, and made costumes and everything. And the folks at the Voltron, the offices right now that make it, they showed it at San Diego Comic Con last year.
Oh, really?
Which was pretty cool. Yeah, yeah, they're Hall H, like in Hall H.
Wow.
They like opened showing our little short, which was pretty.
That's cool.
Which was incredibly flattering. We were,
yeah. Nice. So rudramakesmovie.tumblr.
Yeah, it's mostly just a collection of random stuff. But I'm starting an essay series now, so do once a month essay series, getting back into film criticism. So
as always, you can find us on our website, commentarytrackstars.com, where we do our other show, Commentary Track Stars, which is going to be ending very shortly, but we'll still have other stuff up there, don't worry. And you can find us on Twitter at ComTrackStars or email us at ComTrackStars@gmail.com. And we will be back next week with my Uncle Tony to talk about Richard Matheson's novel Ride the Nightmare, as well as the Terrence Young, Charles Bronson movie Cold Sweat.